what I heard.
He had a good Snapchat yesterday. Mama, don't let your babies grow up to drive cleaners.
Oh, jeez.
Well, the problem, you know, I see with all that is we don't reuse pallets for anything.
And we do. We make coffee tables and all kinds of stuff out of them.
We put it on our walls and reclaim barn board.
I take coffee tables and make pallets.
But see, the problem with that is now the cost of the material to make that coffee table went from $10 to $100. So who's going to pay that kind of money for a coffee table? You know, your $100 coffee table went to, you know, $1,000 coffee table now.
There is a podcast in Iowa, Funk for Profit was named by they. Fate stirred up a banker near, then quick came an auctioneer. Making profit was their first goal, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Soon may the farmers come to bring us guests and beer and fun. One day when the recording's done, we'll take our mics and go. These formats shook us to our core, with Funk for Fun you will not snore. Banker set all mics to on, and the mullet of podcasts was born. Soon may the farmers come to bring us guests and beer and fun. One day when the recording's done, we'll take our mics and go. Before we knew, conversations grew. Growing corn even said F you. So won't you join Tenor Dave, Corey, and crew? Please like, share, review. Soon may the farmers come to bring us guests and beer and fun. One day when the recording's done, we'll take our mics and go.
Welcome back to another Farm for Fun episode of the Farm for Profit podcast. This is Tanner Winterhoff.
This is Corey Hillebo.
And this is David Whitaker.
Thank you so very much for coming and joining with us during your summertime. We know there's a lot of things to distract you and really appreciate you listening in. Just a reminder, this is Farm for Fun, so we don't have a very structured format today. We're going to talk with some really cool people in agriculture. Have a good time. Drink some beers.
We are celebrating America's birthday today.
That's
happy,
right.
Happy 4th yesterday.
That's right.
It was a great weekend, wasn't it?
Oh, had a blast.
Drank. It was a bad weekend to be a Busch Light.
Bad weekend to be a Busch Light. Did you see they have Busch Light, steak, and corn on the cob all put into one package?
All one package. Yeah.
That's like Midwest all over it.
My buddy used to make Moscow Mule drink kits.
Yeah.
Like had the little shot, had the little, the beer and the mug all in one.
Okay.
Like it was like a novelty item. I'm like, I sent it to him. I'm like, look, it's like a drink and eat kit.
An eat kit. Yep. Yeah.
That's perfect. Thank you, listeners. Like I said, for joining us. Thanks for sharing. Hitting that like, rate, and review button. Leaving your kind words behind. We want to jump in here with today's Head of the Class Listener Review. Of course, brought to you by Gerenhof. We appreciate their support. Remember, no matter the crop, their premium harvest head is everything that you need for your harvesting needs. We have Ben Lehman, at Ben underscore V-A-C-I-G. What do you think that stands for? Vacation Instagram?
Virginia Sig? I don't know.
I love the Farm for Profit shows, the episode on tires and compaction. It was really a new topic for me. I learned a ton. Very useful stuff. I like how you presented it a lot. So thank you, Ben, for leaving that review behind for us.
Yeah, Ben's an actual local guy, young guy in agriculture. I think he's interning somewhere now, but him and his dad are actually transitioning to organic. They're just down the road from us. So pretty cool. Should go with last week's episode with Adam Bissell.
That's right. Right in line. Perfect. And Ag Leader, thank you very much for your support. Remember, they have a solution for every season. Their product and solutions help you integrate your entire farm all year round. Use their products to seamlessly connect your equipment and tasks so that your operation runs smoother and more efficiently than ever before. Ag Leader, check them out.
You don't think Ag Leader has anything to do with our guest today, do they?
Absolutely.
Oh.
Or coincidence? Do we want to go with coincidence?
I was going to say we booked him first and it might just fall into place perfectly. Oh, while you're getting there, the Farm for Profit podcast can now marry you.
Oh, that's right.
We can sell your farm.
Ordained.
Mm-hmm. And I am ordained. I did my first wedding yesterday, so yeah, great job.
All right, let's get this put together.
Today on the Mullet of Ag podcast, we travel to hang out with a man that farms in the southeast fringes of the Corn Belt to a state known best for the bourbon in this world. State known for the best bourbon in this world. Speaking of bourbon, he single-handedly took a $65 bottle of Woodford Reserve, scratched something about Farm Talk in it, and sold it on the Travis Burkhart Foundation auction for $875. Ooh, he attended the University of Kentucky, which possibly explains why he fully pronounces both S's when he says Des Moines, but can't seem to find the single S when he pronounces Louisville. Even though he has trouble pronouncing some of these words, we love this man as a Farm Talk staple. He is truly one of the ag leaders, get it, of our industry. We are very excited to have, from Elizabethtown, Kentucky, Mr. Mark Thomas.
Woo-wee. Wow, that was rough, Corey.
Like the introduction there, Corey. I really appreciate that, but it is Louisville.
Huh? And
Des Moines.
Des Moines.
How do you say St. Louis? How do you say St. Louis?
St. Louis.
So you can say S.
Yes. Kansas and Arkansas, Mississippi.
Okay.
But we can say S's. We just don't use them as
Louisville. Louisville.
Louisville.
You probably go up to the farm show quite a bit up there every year, don't you?
The farm show is a staple for us. It's kind of really our kickoff for the ag year. We go up there and spend a week, tractor pull, meet with old friends, new friends, whatever. And then we go home, start working on planters, getting ready. So I know a lot of people come in from all over the country to that show, and really all over the world. We probably take it for granted that it's 45 minutes from home, and we run up there and run back home, and it's just – it's not a big deal to us.
It's probably about the same way with
farm
us.
Progress.
Yeah, with the farm progress.
Not a big deal. Mm-hmm. So.
Now, what are we, 15, 10 minutes away?
When every other year.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So.
No, pretty good gig there. So Corey introduced you a little bit, Mark. Why don't you tell us your story? How did little Mark get interested in farming and then the path as to how you got to where you are now?
Well, farming's really all I've ever wanted to do. You ask my parents or neighbors, anybody, as a little kid, they said, well, that boy's going to farm. That's all he's ever wanted to do. Hated school, absolutely hated elementary and middle school. Just didn't want to go. Was missing out on stuff on the farm. When I got to high school, it got a little better because we had ag classes and whatnot. So I got a little more interested. And then, of course, by college, I knew I had to get interested or I was going to waste a whole lot of money for nothing. But I actually grew up on a dairy farm. My parents dairied until 94. My dad dairied with his dad. And then in mid-90s, 94 there, my mom and dad got the opportunity to buy her mom and dad's farm. So then we switched to a barrel-to-finish hog operation. We were barrel-to-finish until 98. Anybody that was in hogs in the 90s knows what 98 was. And at that point, we switched from hogs to primarily row crops. And since then, we've really expanded quite a bit. We've always been very diversified, and really what saved mom and dad in the late 90s was we had tobacco, we had hay, we had cattle, we had row crops, as well as the hogs. So we weren't relying on one source of income to get us through. And that's kind of still how we operate today. I was actually talking to a guy yesterday that, and I said, we was talking about the hay market, and with higher grain prices, when people were wanting to kill down their hay fields and go back to just grain production. I said, well, you can't expect people to, your customer base to be there if you jump in and out of the hay industry. So you kind of got to stick with it through the good years of grain prices to have it there to fall back on when grain prices aren't high. And that's kind of what we do. We've got a little bit of sweet corn raised to sell at the farmer's market, kind of in a fresh market there. Really diversified and kind of spread our eggs out where if something fails or the price is not that great, we can still operate year to year.
I think hay might be just as good a crop this year as corn, just because everything where we're at is brown, brown, brown. Oh, yeah. And yeah. I've been telling my wife already, I don't care if it's $100 a bale, we better start buying.
Yep.
That's right. And every year here, it seems like fields just go into grain production and you lose that hay. And every year the price goes up and it rewards people that do a good job and can stay in the market. Most of our square bales go into the equine industry through racehorses, actually, training facilities outside of Churchill Downs where they stay and train all year before they go to the major races.
Mm-hmm. You guys ever been there?
Churchill Downs. I have not. Or go south.
Have you ever been to Churchill Downs?
I have not been there.
Yeah?
Tanner just spritzed everywhere.
Spritzed you?
Yes.
You know, funny story on that. I live in Kentucky, 45 minutes from Churchill Downs, and I have only been there one time when I was in middle school on a field trip.
Did you go to the infield and dress crazy?
No. Now, my wife has been to Oaks Day and actually the Derby Day.
Yeah.
And, you know, she wears the big poofy hat, and, you know, she really enjoys it. She didn't go this year, but she's been, you know, several years before. But when I was in Lexington at Kentucky, at UK, we would go to Keeneland on Fridays. We would skip class and mm-hmm. go over there and bet on the horses.
Good friend of mine auctions at Keeneland.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's cool. You said you've always been diversified. Was corn and soybeans always a staple crop down there, or has that kind of crept in?
It has crept in. Tobacco was always the staple crop here.
Okay.
Just for the sheer amount of money that tobacco would bring in, you know, guys would, back in its heyday, when there was actually limits on how much tobacco you could grow, guys were making really good money, $1,500, $2,000 an acre. You know, if you had good family help that you didn't, you know, if somebody had a bunch of kids, didn't have to pay, you know, a whole bunch of labor, there was really good money in tobacco, and it paid for a ton of farms in this area. And then actually in the early 2000s, the tobacco buyout come through, and that kind of killed the tobacco market. It took it from smaller production. You know, we had 7 acres. That was the most we ever had. But at the time, we had 7. My uncle had 3. We had neighbors that had 2 or 3. It was a lot of smaller patches throughout the county or throughout the state as a whole. And then once that buyout came through and you didn't have quota anymore that had to be raised on your farm, then it went to large farms, 100, 150, 200 acre.
What's the tobacco buyout? I don't know what that is.
Okay. So in... I guess, so years ago, I'm talking back in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
tobacco was set up on per acre. So they would come to my farm and they'd say, okay, you've been raising tobacco now for X amount of years. You've raised this much. This farm number is going to have 3 acres of base. So at that time, they would actually go out and they would measure 3 acres on your farm. And you could put as many plants as you wanted in that 3 acres. But my grandfather, great-grandfather would actually be one of the guys that would measure. And if they measured, say you had 3 acre base and you measured 3.2 acres, he would have to sit there while they disked under or bush hogged off the 2/10 of an acre, the extra. Hmm. So then once that went away, it went to a poundage quota. And so from that, say 2,000 pounds of the acre, then my farm number would have 6,000 pounds of base. Then I could go rent my neighbor's 3,000 pounds and put it with mine. And then, so it was much like renting land, except I could then grow that tobacco on my farm as long as I had that base. But wow. You could only sell so many pounds. So if we had 10,000 pounds of base, we could only sell 10,000 pounds. It didn't matter if we produced 20,000. You could only sell 10. Hmm. And it was kind of like a contract with the, you know, we do grain contracts now. If we were under that, you were just short. If you were over that, you just had overage. You held it over the next year or you destroyed it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So then in the late 90s, they started talking about the tobacco buyout. And that is when cigarette companies... You remember when we were kids and you had the Marlboro Man on the TV just smoking cigarettes like it's going out of style.
Yep.
Surgeon General come out and said, "Hey, you're causing cancer. You need to put a whole lot of money towards, you know, cancer awareness for tobacco use." So that's when they started when it shifted kind of big tobacco. So I think tobacco companies put that money up. Some federal money, subsidies maybe, and actually bought everybody's base.
Really?
And So say again, say we had 10,000 pounds. If we had been growing that base for so many years, we got a certain price. If we owned that base and we leased it out, we got a lower price. If we rented base, we got pennies on the dollar for that. But it really come down to the people that own base. And there was an auctioneer here, Dave, you'll appreciate this, who sold farm just for years. So they would actually sell the farm, they would sell the equipment, and then they would sell the tobacco base. And farmers would buy it. Well, this guy would just buy it himself, and they raised tobacco. I mean, he had hundreds of thousands of pounds of base when the buyout came through. And that's when it switched from individual farmers to pretty much large farmers keeping over. Then it went to a full contract. So if you wanted to raise tobacco, you went to Philip Morris or RJ Reynolds, or any of these big tobacco companies, said, "Hey, I want to grow tobacco for you." I'd say, "Okay, you can have 50,000 pounds. You can have 10,000 pounds, whatever." And they would give it that way. Well, they slowly faded out the little guys so they could get the big guys. Because other countries, much like grain, can produce tobacco cheaper than they can here. And as a matter of fact, I've heard for years that when it comes to tobacco, they only want to buy tips from the U.S., which is the very top of the leaf. It's a really dark, red, thick leaf. That's all they want to buy because they can blend it with the other less quality stuff from other countries and sell it, and, you know, still make a good cigarette or a chew product.
Really
interesting. I never thought that's the route we'd go on this show.
No. I
knew nothing about tobacco.
I'm in trance. I'm ready to go.
All right. Well, let's taste our first beer. So, Mark, the first one I opened was
Coyote Verde,
the green apple hard cider. The green can. It's from Fishback and Stevenson. So thank you to Dahl Distributing.
Fairfield, Iowa.
Did you figure that out?
I never figured it out.
This one's good, I think.
I actually heard a radio ad, and it was Dahl.
Dahl?
Yeah.
My bad. My apologies for 50 episodes of saying Dahl.
Oh.
Oh, this is good stuff. What are you talking about?
Tried it already? Mark's like lipping his lips.
It tastes like a green Jolly Rancher. Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly right.
It smells not like it tastes. Smell it.
It's really good.
Green apple hard cider, our original bright and fresh cider, back sweetened with tart Granny Smiths. I can't even say that because my mouth is still watering.
I think you nailed it. It's a green Jolly Rancher.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
They won.
There's a lot of sugar in that, but that's good.
They won a bronze medal at the New York International Cider Competition last year with this.
4.25% alcohol.
It is. It's making my mouth water.
Well, it's not tobacco, but it's good.
Nice. It's a nice change
of
pace.
It's not bourbon either, but, you know, yeah.
That was the TikTok that I thought was funny. So one of my favorite people and funniest people that I follow on TikTok is Mark. I don't know if our sense of humor is just aligned, but some of the stuff you put out there, I laugh out loud in areas and spots where I shouldn't be laughing out loud. So I appreciate that. But the one that really got me was when you did, I think, pretty sure you did it about how they're giving away a beer if you go get the COVID shot. Why shouldn't it be bourbon? A shot of bourbon, a shot for a shot.
Oh yeah,
would have been a much better campaign.
It'd have been a great campaign. I mean, they could have pushed that for miles, but
especially if it's some good bourbon.
Oh yeah, there's a difference in bourbon and good bourbon.
And good bourbon.
When you go to the grocery store, you go to the liquor store, the bourbon is on the bottom shelf. The good bourbon is up high or in a locked case behind the register.
Have you ever talked to Marty on the phone, Marty Nall?
I have not. Actually, I feel kind of bad because, you know, Marty is just right here close to me. And the two or three times that we have, you know, had somebody come in when Montana Farmer 75 was here, already had some work stuff come up and couldn't come. And same way when I met the Burkharts, Marty had some work stuff come up. So we've Snapchatted back and forth and set up some plans, you know, if we're ever downtown or something, going to holler at him and see if, you know, they can come out. I'd really like to meet him. And Mrs. Marty Nall.
Yeah, I've talked to him. I've talked to him on the phone several times, and man, we can go down a path on bourbon. He knows everything about it, and I'm learning everything from him. It's pretty fun.
You know, Tanner, I appreciate your kind words about my TikTok. But, you know, on to Marty. Marty is probably the largest Farm Talk supporter we have.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's always throwing support out there for everybody and watching videos and just always has something positive to say.
Mm-hmm.
He's been great for Farm Talk.
Yeah, I agreed. When he first reached out, when we started putting that auction together, I was trying to figure out the connection. But I do. I really think he just enjoys the entire community, has a lot of fun following all of our stories. But is, yeah, a huge supporter.
Yeah, he sent a couple bottles of Blanton's bourbon up, which, and then you sent what I said, that you just got a bottle of Woodford Reserve and sent that up. Where did you get that? You got it engraved with something. What did that say?
So it just said Farm Talk Established 2020, limited. I can't remember if it said limited edition or limited one of one. I wanted to do something that was kind of unique. I think if we put something on there that, you know, if we just put Farm Talk or we just put Travis Burkhart Foundation or something, somebody could possibly replicate it one day.
Yep.
So I thought we'd just do the one of one. And my mom actually manages the Kroger Wine and Spirit Shop here in town. Oh. And you can go in there at any time and buy, if you buy Woodford Reserve and you leave it with them for a couple of weeks, they can ship it to Louisville and have it engraved for free.
Huh.
So really anybody can buy a bottle of bourbon and put anything they want on it. So, you know, that's a great feature of Woodford. They're a good company to work with. They do a lot of fundraisers around here for just random calls. They'll come set up at a liquor store with an engraver and you know, if they'll buy, somebody will buy a bottle and give them $5 or something, they'll engrave it and donate that money to whatever cause they're working for that day.
I mean, what a great gift, right? Like, I mean, you literally, I don't know how much a bottle is down there, but I've bought a bottle of Woodford before, and it's like $65 here, something like that, or $55, something like that. But $875. I had to look it up this morning when I was getting ready for this. I'm like, wow.
It's awesome.
That's
Farm Talk community.
It's like 1,300%.
I was hoping it would bring what I paid for it. And when it got to like $100 or $150, I was like, okay, that's cool. That's a good,
yeah,
good number to raise for this. I'm happy with that. And then it just kept going and going. And Corey's pockets weren't deep enough.
No, I wanted it. I ended up having to buy a bottle of Blanton's.
So then what is the bourbon of choice? Being down there in bourbon country, do you have a go-to?
So you can't get it very often. My favorite is actually called Elmer T. Lee. It's just a really smooth, good older bourbon. But as far as just to go out and have a drink at a bar or something, Woodford or Maker's, either one.
They're both
top of the line, I think.
So, Marty, when you're listening to this, I want you to text me. Elmer T. Lee, I want you to text me or call me. I want to hear your opinion.
Your story?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. The other thing that I picked up when I'd watched some of your stuff is that you've got a decent-sized toy tractor collection, too, don't you?
I do. I started that last time corn was $8, nearly $8. you know, when there was disposable income around. And I've got a lot of toys that I played with growing up. And when I was in FFA in high school, we started the FFA tractor collection. And I keep the John Deere and the Case IH Precision keys. Those are kind of my go-to. That's what I really like. And then the unique ones, anything that's a chase unit, gold or silver or dusty or anything like that, I kind of pick them up. My wife threatens me every time I come home with a new toy. She's like, what are you going to do with that? I was going to put it on the shelf with the rest of them. She's like, you're not going to get them out of the box. So they're not worth anything if you get them out of the box. And she just thinks that's ridiculous. But it's just a little hobby I've got. I've got some that are worth a fair amount of money. And she said, well, you're not going to sell them one day. And I said, no, but our daughter might. Who knows? It might put her through college.
I sold a guy with 1,700 of them in his basement, and I think we cleared about $100,000. So
wow.
It was He had all kinds, though. He had a lot of wagons. But are yours all Ertl 1/16 scale, or do you go into different ventures?
Pretty much all Ertl 1/16 scale. I've picked up a lot of the DCP trucks in the 1/64 scale. Several 1/64 scale stuff as well. That's what I played with growing up for the most part because it was cheap. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, 1/16 scale Ertl was actually durable stuff, and the stuff I played with as a kid is still whole.
Yeah,
plastic stuff we buy now wouldn't last like that stuff did. Some of those I wish that I'd never got out, and I can't believe I'm going to admit this on where TikTok listeners are, but my grandfather bought me a 1/16 scale L2 Gleaner combine tool. And because we had gleaners growing up, that he had a K. My dad ran that K, and then an F, and then an F2 before we went over to Case IH. But you know, I love that toy. I broke the auger off of it. Literally, I don't know if I hit a tree or the wagon or what, but I broke the auger off of it. And you know, I wish now that I had not played with that. I wish I still had it in the box. But at the same time, you know, it's hard to pass up the memories. You know, you have a playing toy like that. So
absolutely,
that one's kind of
so the augers. The augers fall off the toys as well as the actual ones too.
What I heard.
He had a good Snapchat yesterday. Mama, don't let your babies grow up to drive gleaners.
Oh, jeez. I spent way too much time in a tractor
cab. Yeah, that's enough tractor cab for you for the week.
Yeah.
But that's kind of where my TikToks come from, just random stuff like that. And you know, we don't let anybody, you know, off the hook. I mean, we give all the seed dealers, you know, seed companies equal grief. You know, we've attacked on our loan officers a little bit and our seed buyers and our seed salesmen and our grain buyers and just everybody all in the same, you know. And I actually had a Bex dealer come up to me, brought a quote by this winter, and he said, "You know how many times I get your TikTok sent to me?" And I said, "But did I say anything that wasn't true?" Uh-huh. He said, "No." I said, Then nobody can be mad. I said, mm-hmm. We're just taking the funny part out of everything and throwing a lighter side to it and making people laugh. And that's what we're out to do.
What's your wife think of your TikTok world? What do you got? 45,000 followers?
About 40,000. Yeah. She's not a huge TikTok fan. And she actually shared one of them to the first big one we had, the we bought a tractor one. It's actually her voice saying the no and she actually shared it to Facebook and she said, "I hate TikTok." She said, "But I love Mark." So here he is.
That's pretty good.
How many views did that one have? Was that over a million?
It did. It went over a million. It's like 1.2 million.
Did you get Newsweek calling you? Dave's got Newsweek and all these other publications calling him after he's got a big auction one out.
I had one.
And
it's
yeah,
all it takes.
Yeah, and you're getting like press releases. Yeah,
2.7 million.
Ooh.
Wow, that's great.
But
we got to use that. Get this podcast blasted out there to people all over the country.
Newsweek.
Yeah.
Right.
Everybody thought it was a cult. That's why they all.
It was a little cultish.
Number one comment was, "This is a cult? Where did this cult come from?" Yeah.
No, cult.
No publicity is bad publicity, right?
That's right. Right.
So, well, should we do the next beer?
We can. Yeah, let's grab the other cider. Fishback and Stevenson from, what'd you say, Fairfield, Iowa?
Yep.
Thanks Southeast again, Iowa. Dahl.
I like Southeast Iowa.
For grab the other cider, River.
Ooh. First, this is a Jolly Rancher, too.
First crutch.
It is.
Crush.
Like this is more of a Jolly Rancher than the first one, I think. This is the
very much so.
The pink. This is.
Oh, wow.
I want to cuss. This is effing good.
It smells better than the other one.
Very good.
Holy smokes.
That's like sitting on a pontoon on the river.
Yeah.
This would be dangerous.
Right there.
Holy four smokes. Dudes just sitting around raving about a seltzer.
Drinking our first crush pink watermelon.
This ain't a seltzer, is it?
Hard apple cider. Close enough.
Oh. I guess it's a cider.
Pours out like a rosé.
It's a skinny can, so I consider that like a cider.
Oh, I see.
You got
a skinny koozie?
Oh. Doll, if you hear this, you got to send us a case, case of this First Crush, because we're going to go out on the pontoon with it.
I'm a big fan.
First Crush.
Let's see if I can find some more on these guys. I didn't do a good job of Fishback and Stevenson.
I took my pontoon out the other day, got in the lake, click, like, doggone it. I forgot to check the battery.
You took it to the lake before. Just put the battery charger on after it, no matter what.
Then I went and bought a new battery, got it back in, and it goes, and still wouldn't start. So four times later, it's electronic fuel injected, and I'm looking like around the outside of it. Don't know boat motors at all. Like, there's got to be something. It's not getting fuel. It's not, you know, let's pump the bulb again. Nothing. I drove home empty handed with a boat that made it in the lake twice but never ran.
Nice. I think my parents' pontoon's still sitting in the shed. Haven't even got it out yet this year.
So if you fix boats, call me.
So thanks again to Doll Distributing for the Fishback and Stevenson Iowa's Cider Producer of the Year for 2020.
Really?
And New York International Overall Competition winner.
I'm going to buy some of that. I think my wife would like that.
I think a lot of people would like that.
Yep.
We haven't said that in a while. We've been getting some good drinks, but really jumped on. So there you go, Mark. That's a treat. I did see that the closest it gets to you is Missouri for distribution.
I'll have to go see Chuck Weldon and get some of that.
Oh,
you go to Chuck, you'll be not too far from us. He's only like an hour and a half, 2 hours south of us.
Okay. All right.
So, are you going to the TikTok meetup in Missouri?
I am not. We actually leave for vacation the Sunday or the Monday of that. So
when is that? Next month? That's July
16th and 17th.
Should be
like
2 weeks after this comes out.
Yeah.
I think I've been hearing that from a lot though, Mark. I mean, unfortunately I'm not able to make it. Kind of the same thing. Have a family obligation to be a part of, I think.
Yeah. We're sounds all, like neither we're one of you guys. Going, yeah.
Yep. Which that's a bummer, but we've got good news, Mark. If you can't make it to Missouri, you can come to Ames the first week of December and see everybody up there as we get ready to relaunch the Farm for Profit Experience, our annual event.
This is official.
Official.
Wow.
You heard it here first.
I would hope that you heard it here first.
So we got a lot of things to figure out, but we officially picked the dates, December 2nd and 3rd.
Awesome.
So yes, listeners, December 2nd and 3rd, stay tuned. We've already got some really excited stuff confirmed, but we've got a lot of work to do.
Might as well preface this. Like, you've been doing this for several years. You didn't do it last year, right?
Right. So this would be the seventh annual, if you don't count 2020, because it seems like everybody else throws 2020 away. We're going to throw it away, too. So this is the seventh annual meeting.
But it's different now.
Oh, yeah. We've got to throw a lot more fun into this. We don't want it to be a standard sit-down conference meeting like the crap I just dealt with this whole last week. We're going to make it really entertaining and have a whole bunch of people from Twitter and TikTok there to where you're going to spend more time having a conversation with a friend.
Yep. You're not going to want to miss it.
Right. It'll be the event of the year, I swear.
A lot of FOMO if you don't come.
That's the worst part about all these events. You know, when everybody went to the Burkhart's auction and when everybody was up there with you all after the Travis Burkhart Foundation fundraiser auction, man, all of us that couldn't go just watching TikTok and Snapchat, and the FOMO was bad.
Yeah,
like, it was really bad.
That's how we felt at Mike's auction.
Yeah, it was retirement
sale, and we couldn't go, and that's really why we decided to do it. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, we gotta do something. So
it's gonna be big. We do have limited capacity, so once we actually get ticket sales out, people are going to want to jump on them. That's not a marketing tool at all, but we've got we got a really cool venue space that has limited capacity that we're getting really excited to be announced.
Yep.
Back to Mark, because that's the whole reason we're doing this show, is we want to get to know Mark a little better. So you had mentioned, so you're married, you got kids. We're recording this on Father's Day. We did get a comment suggestion. It'd be nice to know when things are actually recorded, because they know they aren't live. So we're recording this on Father's Day, but this is the 4th of July show.
Yes, happy 4th of July yesterday.
It was happy 4th of July yesterday.
I hope you got all your fingers.
Yeah.
And the parades were good, and you got a bunch of candy.
Yeah. So a little bit about your family, Mark.
So I've been married to my wife, Wesley, since December of 2018. And we actually just had a baby September 4th. For those of you who follow Kentucky Derby on Oaks Day in 2020. So because of COVID, Oaks and Derby was not in May. It was in September.
Oh.
So they delayed it because everything was shut down. Then by September, things were opened back up. We had like a September 18th potential delivery date. And my wife and I talked about it. And I said, you know, if she was to come early, how cool would it be to have her daughter born on Oaks or Derby Day in 2020? It'll be a story she can tell forever. So she was born on Oaks Day, which if you don't follow horse racing, Oaks Day is the day where they run the fillies. It's any female horse under 4 years old. Big day in the state here for people to take off work and go drink. I guess they have a drink that day called the Lily.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a great adventure. Being a father, and I tell my wife all the time, of all the things I've done in my life, I don't care how many TikTok followers I have or how many acres we farm or how many bushel of corn we produce, the greatest thing I've done in my life is be a dad to that little girl. And, she's changed our lives for the better, obviously, really brought us closer together as a family. And couldn't imagine not having her now. Everybody said parenthood's great, but you don't believe them until it actually happens.
I just want you to join the club.
Yeah,
that's what all the other parents want.
Yeah,
yep.
Misery loves company.
Misery loves company. Yep.
My wife had actually given me a dad joke book for Christmas of 2020 or 2019. And my brother-in-law comes walking by and he was like, well, you're not a dad yet, so they're just bad jokes. Which, I'm the dad joke king. I mean, that's you watch my TikToks, you can tell I've got a very dry sense of humor and a lot of dad jokes, and that's kind of my thing. So now I can officially make the dad jokes.
Oh,
and yes. It's a good thing.
My 5-year-old Ava is already on to the dad jokes and gets after me when I say them now.
Oh, she criticizes you?
Dad, that's a joke. We were talking a little bit about before we got on here, and Tanner and Dave were messing around with cords and cameras and things, but you were talking, what do you say, like $15,000, $16,000 an acre ground down there in Kentucky?
So my great uncle's farm sold 2 months ago. It was 53 acres, brought 940,000, I think, including the 10% buyer's premium.
Oh my!
Come out to a little over 16,000 an acre, and then another little 40-acre patch here sold 2 weeks ago and brought almost 18,000. We are right on the outskirts. Elizabethtown is our county seat. Population of about 40,000, and it is expanding rapidly. We have a lot of factories here. Really good place people raise a family. Fort Knox is just a little bit north of us, so we have a lot of military come in and out. And building lots are going crazy. On that first farm I was telling you about, there was 3 building lots, 1.3 acres, brought $52,000 or $53,000 a piece.
Wow.
So that really bumps the average up. But the two bigger tracks that sold for farm ground brought 10 and 12. They won't be farm ground, but they were bigger tracks that would have been for farms.
Gotcha. So it's being driven by the sprawl or, the growth of town. So if you get, say you got 15 miles away from town or 20 miles away from town that didn't have really the speculation behind it, you're saying it's more $10,000 nigger?
Yeah, it can get, you can have ranges from 5 to 15, 20. Kind of depends on where you're at. If you're in town, ground's going to bring in the 6 figures per acre. There's not a whole lot of farms left, in town that to be developed. So it's kind of expanded out. You know, you get into the western part of the county, the ground's a little wetter, more rocky. 30, 40 minutes from the county seat, the ground gets pretty cheap out there just because it's not as good a ground.
Does anybody hold up with a 10% buyer's premium? I need to move down there. I need to start selling with a 10% buyer's premium.
Especially for $15,000
an acre. Ding dong.
I hate buyer's premium. I really do. That's how a lot of guys have done it around here because they can go to their their seller and they can say, we're going to sell your farm. And if it brings $10,000 an acre, you get $10,000. And then I get another $1,000 on top of that. So, a lot of times I think it does hurt because people are figuring with that 10% in mind that, okay, if I bid $100,000, I'm paying $110,000. Mm-hmm. If you're buying, say, a combine, that you want to pay $100,000 for, you're kind of stopping at 90 because if you bid any more than that, by the time you add 10% on it, you're way over your limit or your budget. But they've been doing that here my entire life. Some companies have come in and took that out and have picked up a few auctions here and there because of it. Everybody's just kind of got accustomed to it. So
yeah,
you just kind of know when you go in.
Might be an opportunity.
In Iowa, you'd be shunned unless it's equipment. See, now on equipment, everybody's used to it because they're used to the auction times of the world or the big irons, and everybody charges a buyer's premium. But farmland has not really picked up with it. I tried it once, actually, about 9 years ago. Got a commercial. It was on TV, the whole works. I'll sell your farm for free. Yeah, it didn't go so well.
Still didn't.
I think I sold one farm, and that was it. But it... The concept is if he figures down 90%, if one guy in the room didn't, then they all still got to bid against him.
Yeah.
So it only takes one guy in the room to not bid down. The other concept, the best that's ever been explained to me was this, and that was, is that your truck over there? Yeah. Well, what'd the sticker say? What'd that truck cost? Well, it was $60,000. That's what it said on the windshield?
The door?
Yeah, that's what it said. Well, okay, that's what you paid. You were ready to pay. You got on the lot, talked to salesman, you're ready to pay that. Yeah, that's what I paid. What did you write a check for?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's tax, tag, title, there's all of it. So you're used to paying a little bit more than you were going to give anyway. Did you talk the guy down on the truck because you knew there was tax, tag, title? Well, probably not.
Yeah.
So did you figure it down? Well, no. Did you still buy it? Yep. Are you still happy with it? Yep. So that's the argument for it.
It's kind of the coffee shop mentality. Yeah, I paid this for it.
Correct.
Yeah, sticker says 72.
Yeah, you really paid way more than that.
That's
I guess.
Do you use multi-par up there?
Sometimes I have done it, but everybody wants a fast auction up here. They don't want it as slow. You get into Kansas, get into Nebraska, out west, Montana, or bigger tracks where you have that, then yes, we'll use it. But some guys can get really confused if you don't have the computer software to make it happen.
What is that, multi-par?
So we actually do the multi-pars here. There's no computers. They do it on a big whiteboard.
Big whiteboards, okay.
It's a little harder to follow.
Yep.
It seems like, but if you're there, you can pick up on it and catch up.
They take, they sell you, they establish a high price. They don't sell you. They establish high price on tract one, then establish high price on two, so on and so forth. Tract 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 30, however many.
Yep.
And then they say, how would you like to buy it? So a lot of guys think multi-par just stops right there and then they give the opportunity to the one big guy. That's not true multi-par. They go back and say, well, Corey, do you want tracks 2, 3, and 4? Yeah. Well, how much will you give? So they add up the totals of what you had, and then you got to up it by 10% or whatever the auction company deems. And it just keeps going and going and going until the unchallenged bidder becomes the buyer. But let's say Mark runs out of money, but I have more, and you guys run out of money. I'll up my just a little bit, and then all your guys' money collectively gets put back in with mine. And we make more money. You're already confused. See?
Yeah, this seems like it could go south in a hurry.
And if you only want one track, at least the way they do it here, say I only wanted track 3, I have to be on track 3 in round 1.
I gotcha.
So I have to be the high bidder in round 1. And then if Tanner, you put two and three together later, you know, I can pull three back out. But if I decide, you know, halfway through the auction, well, I'd like to have track three, I have to buy another track as well. Oh, it can't just be a single track.
Oh, really? I haven't heard that one. That's unique.
That's another way to grab a dollar.
Very different, very unique.
Huh. I still like 10% buyer's premium. I do have a friend that sells with a 10% buyer's premium, but he says this way, Tanner. He says, we'll pay everything. That's what I mean, everything. Who pays the back taxes? He said, we cover it. Who pays the closing fee? We cover it. Who pays the title commitment? We cover it. Who pays? So they're charging more, yes, but they're also covering everything.
So they're probably getting down to a 3 or 4% correct commission.
You'd have to really pay attention to these deals, because you could get yourself in a world of hurt if you didn't understand what the tax position was or the way things are set up.
Yep. But that's their game, and it's worked quite well for them. They've done very well. He said it averages higher than what it would be if they didn't do that, but they wanted a turnkey solution for all the people that didn't know everything else, and so they made it, we will handle everything, period. You will pay nothing. So, well, interesting.
I opened the next beer. So we actually, thanks again to Dahl for providing this. We've had some Franklin Street beers before. What I just opened was Project Blueberry Book, Mark.
All right.
And we have in the past had their Mango Fett.
Oh, yeah. That was
and
good.
The Drugstore Cowboy. So we've had two from this brewery, but we haven't had these two before.
And we sent Mark a Drugstore Cowboy. So let's give it a try. I think it...
I was going to say, based on that face, I'm thinking sour. It must be.
Very sour.
Oh.
And it says blueberry sour beer on it.
Oh, my.
So they do not lie, but...
It creeps all the way from the front of the mouth to the back of the throat, on the tongue, like it's everywhere.
So our first one poured out light colored like a white wine. Second one like a rosé. This poured out deep red like a red wine. I mean, looking at these glasses here, you got a lot of colors. So this is a
sour blueberry.
My cheeks are
like a warhead.
Squeezed in, I can't even say blueberry. A blueberry sour so good, you'd think it'd be highly guarded government secret. From the first pour, you get a glimpse of the blueberry goodness, and it is with its almost violet hue. So, yeah, violet would be dark wine.
Yeah.
Oh, here, do you want to look at this? Look at the can. Read the boxes on the can. Those are kind of neat.
Read the boxes.
6.5 ABV or 28 IBUs, because remember, we're keeping score.
I was thinking the face was like the guy in Dumb and Dumber when the cop pulls up and says, "You shut your pumpkin pie haircutted mouth," if you know whatever he says, and then he takes it and he kind of sucks on it and get the heck out of here.
The boxes. So under the sour box says blueberries, science, mystery, more science. And under the life circles box, crop circles, probes, area 51, Mulder. Which Mulder would be the scary show that used to be on, like,
X-Files?
X-Files, yes.
Thank you, Google.
Thank you, Google.
Men in Black.
Yeah.
Because it's got a spaceship abducting someone on the can.
Franklin Street Brewery, Manchester, Iowa.
It's going to be a...
Mark, did Manure Mafia Matt send you the TikTok of the guy that was talking about the inflated price of pallets?
I don't think I got that one.
So he was. It was a guy. Well, what, I can't remember his name. I should know his name because he's got a pretty big account.
But yeah.
The point is he was talking about the cost of pallets. A year ago was $6 a pallet.
I know Denny COVID-19 was talking about it on one of his, but yep. I don't think it's the one you're talking about.
Yeah. So it was $6 a pallet a year ago. Now it's $48 a pallet. So 8 times the increase. And stated that just watch your grocery store shelves. I still got that blueberry pucker in my mouth.
Mm-hmm. Pucker.
Grocery store shelves, because all that produce is shipped on a pallet, and the farmer can't absorb an 8 times increase on something that's supposed to be a very small cost to their operation, let alone all these other goods that are shipped on pallets.
Well, the problem, you know, I see with all that is we don't reuse pallets for anything other than
Hold on, I'm stopping you. We do. We make coffee tables and all kinds of stuff out of them.
We put it on our walls and reclaim barn board.
I take coffee tables and make pallets.
But see, the problem with that is now the cost of the material to make that coffee table went from $10 to $100. So who's going to pay that kind of money for a coffee table? You know, your $100 coffee table went to, you know, the $1,000 coffee table now.
But I get where you're going. No, you're exactly right. It needs to get corrected somehow, some way.
A couple of my friends' wives are pallet people, I would call them, you know, make stuff out of pallets or just like paint stuff on them. And so like every time they have like a little birthday or something, we always got a couple raggedy old pallets in the back or something. So I just bring them a pallet.
Geez, that's like a $300 gift.
Well, now.
Well, my.
Oh, well, the last one, I got this little cute one that was just like 2x2. That something, yeah. like an electric motor or something came on. I brought her one of those. She loved it.
I don't know. I got some OSB to return. Luckily, I overfigured somehow, and I had like an extra 10 sheets.
Nice.
Have you seen the TikTok where the guy dismantles his deck? Like, he built the deck a year ago out of treated wood, dismantles it, and returns it. And apparently, if there's no receipt, you get what the current price is.
No. You get a credit.
No.
That's awesome.
With all the holes in it and all the cuts?
I'm just telling you what I saw.
So I've tried to return stuff to the store without a receipt, but I tried to return something to Academy one day, and they were going to give me the cheapest price that had been in the last 6 months.
Oh, really?
So it wasn't even what it was worth that day or what you potentially bought it for without a receipt. If it had been on sale and you've been able to buy it for a quarter, that's what they were going to give you back.
But last 6 months might cover
it still
most
might.
Of the high prices now.
Well, that's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I don't know. Wires up too. Copper.
Oh, really?
Oh, man. Well, 10-year high.
Just saw another one. Someone found a 1,250-pound chunk of natural copper, a deposit that was there, sitting there hanging from the front-end loader of a backhoe. Like, just think of the money that guy just fell into for a natural copper deposit.
Like $5 a pound?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I know what's up.
I know Tanner and I are friends with you on Snapchat. You've sent some Snapchats of a typical field, like all the different road directions and all that. So when you're talking like $15,000 ground, like, that's not a square field, right?
It's not square, flat, and black.
No.
It's definitely not black. Could be square, you know, could be rectangle, but there's nothing here that's square. Property lines were put together years ago by a meandering creek that may or may not be there anymore. They got through the woods and they found a thin path where a deer had walked it down. So that's kind of how they followed it. They went to the big oak tree in the corner that's probably not there anymore. But farms here are very, very chopped up. We have very karst topography. And a lot of sinkholes. So these big sinkholes, and I'm not saying, you know, we got the little ones that are big rounds of basketball. You can put number 3 rock in it and fill them up. But I've got some that would swallow a house. And as those got bigger, the trees grew up around them. So they're just, you know, they're great big, just bunches of trees in the middle of the field. So you got to farm around that. You know, roads aren't straight. They just kind of follow. They followed the property lines. So they would go straight and they get to a property line, they'd make a 90-degree turn, and then they'd make another 90-degree turn at the property line. Well, when that was county roads, when the state come through and paved them, they straightened them out quite a bit, but they're still, you know, meandering through the countryside, I guess you would say.
They use meets and bounds instead.
Really?
That's right. Flat is not very much in our vocabulary. We have some that's that way, but for the most part, we're pretty rolling red clay hillsides, really. Our creek and river bottoms, you may get topsoil that's 12, maybe 16 inches deep. But you can get on top of the hills and you have maybe a half inch, 2-3 if you're lucky. So we are very much dependent on the water that we get throughout the growing season.
You've been getting quite a bit of rain this year, right?
We have. My dad and I were talking about that this morning. We have squeezed 2 months worth of work in about 3 weeks. Really 2 months worth of work.
Wow.
We did a little bit of work late March, early April. it rained us out till the end of April. We had 2 weeks where we just hit it hard. We planted all of our corn, all of our beans, did a bunch of spraying, got a bunch of fertilizer spread. It rained again for 2 weeks. And we kind of started this past week again in the hay field and finishing up replanting beans and post-spraying corn and beans. And there's just no time. I mean, we had 3.5 inches of rain in 2 days a couple weeks ago. Hmm. And which I'm not going to turn it down. It came light. It came easy. So it didn't, you know, wash the ditches out, but our ground just can't hold that much water. We can get a nice, gentle inch of rain today, and I'll need another inch in 5 to 7 days. Pretty easy. It's very eye-opening to watch Farm Talk and see the struggles that everybody else is going through, the flooding. I mean, you can very easy go to a video that's perfect amount of rain, crop looks great. The next video could be a flooded out cornfield. The next video could be a burn up cornfield. The next video could be somebody who hadn't even got to plant because it's so muddy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's very eye-opening, and it makes me wonder, you know, with this kind of technology, how does the weather not affect the markets more than it does?
Yeah.
You know, I can see, and maybe that's why maybe USDA is smarter than us and what they put out there is actually correct. But we see so much on social media that we think, well, that can't be right because that's not what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
Whereas 30 years ago, before social media, you didn't talk to somebody in Iowa or Indiana or Illinois or North Dakota. You didn't see those pictures every day. So you just assumed what they were saying is correct. Just like last year, when you all had the derecho, you know, we thought, man, corn's going to go through the roof because all that's going to be destroyed. And it didn't hardly do anything to the market. But it's Brian Adams sent me a message last week and said that Kentucky had the highest rated corn crop. And I said, well, that's really saying something, because what I'm looking at right now, I'd be scared to take a picture and show anybody.
It's backyarditis.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
If your paycheck depends on the weather and the clock.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. But I agree. I mean, that USDA is just a giant averaging system.
Yep.
So you take your lows, you take your highs, you basically throw them out, and we average everything that's in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree. I don't think they're positioned right now, but I do know there's a lot of the growing season left.
There is, absolutely, and it's way too early to make any kind of assumption on drought or too much water or whatever. But you know, July and early August is very, very critical of that. And you know, what can look terrible this week can look great next week, and vice versa. What looks, you know, great this week can look terrible next.
Right. I got to jump in here because I've now sat here and watched two sets of tandem bicycles go by.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see the infatuation with a tandem bicycle. Why someone would ever want to own one?
Because your wife can do the pedaling, that's why.
But why would you want to stare at the back of the neck of somebody for however long your bike ride is? And you know
who
that you
goes in the front? Does the guy go in the front or the girl go in the front?
What? I don't know the answer to that.
Is there a...
So maybe we should redesign it so that both the view of these, is different in the front.
Both of these setups were the smaller person was in the back.
So probably, you know, majority of the girl is in the back.
Yeah.
And the guy farts.
You're downwind, your back's sweat rolling off your neck, just looking at the back of their heads. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, I get it. It's probably a togetherness thing, but... Ride your own damn bike.
Yeah.
Beside each other.
They could put a bike with a sidecar on it. Would be just as...
Yeah, there you go.
Right. That's what we should design, is it's two bikes together with just rods holding them up. So you don't have to worry about tipping over after you had too
many
beers.
And you wouldn't cut the wind, though. Like, you wouldn't... aerodynamics. Not cutting it.
See where you went with that. I was like, where are you going with this?
So if you were buying one of these pieces of farm ground...
Oh, not a tandem bike?
Not a tandem bike. Because you squirreled there. It's a good thing Dave doesn't look out the window.
Hold on.
Second
thing I got to say real quick is I'm sure, Mark, you enjoy having your ag leader system in order to navigate these fields that are not square, flat, and bright.
Oh, gosh, absolutely. We've ran ag leader for years now. We bought our first system in 2011. And, you know, one of your other... podcast, when you're talking about ag leader, you use the quote, "So easy dad can do it." And that is 100% correct. We have ran other systems, and my dad and help that we have just cannot pick them up. But Ag Leader, they can pick it up easy. They can remember it. When we switch from corn to beans or whatever with a different configuration, it's very simple, very easy, very user-friendly. I recommend it to everybody. I mean, I really do. Ag Leader has been great to us. I have never had yield monitoring in a combine. It's coming this fall, as well as Cart Ace. So I'm really looking forward to those two things. And, you know, the folks over at Ag Leader are great. We had a downforce issue this spring, actually on an older ISOBUS system called Tech Support. And they, you know, most places you call Tech Support, they say, well, call your dealer, they'll fix it. And this guy on Tech Support just admitted it. He said, look, he said, I'm not very well versed with that system. He said, I'll look in my computer and see what I know, what I can find. And I'm going to send an email right now. He sent an email. I heard him typing, and he sent an email to the somebody else who would have known more about it. And he gave me a few things to check. We checked them. Within 30 minutes of that phone call, I had a follow-up email from that guy. And he said, this is what my supervisor said that would know something about it. You can try this if it doesn't work. Unfortunately, what the first guy said worked great. You know, there's never been a time that I've called them Tech Support and they said, oh, well, that's John Deere's problem or that's Case IH's problem. You know, they've always been willing to work through whatever the issue is, whether it's on their side or somebody else's side, to give us something to try. And I can't say enough good about them. I really can't. So
what is Cart Ace?
Cart Ace is they're new. I believe they introduced it in 2020. And it will actually steer the combine or steer the tractor and grain cart beside the combine. So as the combine makes a pass in the field, whether it be corn rows or whether it be a soybean pass, if you're using auto steer or not, it will generate an automatic line underneath the unload auger. So when the cart tractor gets close, he'll hit the auto steer button and it will steer the tractor where it needs to be. If the combine moves a little bit to the right, cart tractor moves a little bit to the right. Such and such.
Does it match speed?
It will not match speed. It still be on the driver in the cart to match the speed. But with having a display in the tractor that will show what the combine's seeing, the cart operator will be able to see how many bushels are in the combine, when he needs to get him, where he's going, which direction he's going, and
smart, you know, people
potentially be able to see the combine speed too as well to match that easy.
That would still
what
be nice.
We've always done when running the cart is just pick a speed, say 5 mile an hour, and we'll just get the cart, set him at 5 mile an hour, and then the combine will speed up and slow down rather than playing the accordion game where everybody's just running around like chickens.
Yeah.
You know, forward, backward, left, right, whatever. So I'm really looking forward to this fall getting that installed and seeing what that has all about. And
it's really the first time I've heard of it.
Right. That sounds like that'd be really handy, because what you just described is the way my father-in-law ran the combine this last fall. Was he'd be telling me where to go in the cart. I'm like, no, I'm just going to hang out.
Well, and we typically use a 35-foot header for soybeans. And then last year, like when we trialed the Gerenhof head, and it's a 40-footer, well, our auger isn't extended out for the 40-foot head. So I mean, we're talking like less than a foot of play between the grain cart tire and the head. I mean, $100-some-thousand head, and it's like, it's nerve-wracking. So that would be really nice to have.
Absolutely. The best and worst thing we ever did was put two-way radios in all the equipment.
Yeah.
Because you knew where everybody was, but at the same time, you could get a butt chewing if you were in the wrong place or whatnot. But, you know, I've got an uncle who just retired from his full-time job. Hadn't spent a lot of time in the cart, but I think this will make him feel a little more comfortable in that if he's in. And I've also got a nephew who will be 14 this summer. And, you know, I would feel a lot more comfortable putting somebody that age in it, you know, in a field where they, with some safety features there where they can see kind of what they're doing. And I think that's what it's I think that's where it's really going to shine, when you get somebody who's not a well-experienced cart operator. Mm-hmm. And we all know there's a difference in a grain cart driver and a grain cart operator.
All right. So I interrupted you, Corey. I jumped in there. We yeah. went down a rabbit hole, but you were going to ask another question about fields.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so one of these typical fields, if you were going to go buy a good piece of dirt, what you would consider for farming, not something you're going to put a mall on or something like that, what would you expect for a corn yield or a soybean yield down there?
Our county average here is in the 160s on corn and in the high 40s, low 50s on soybeans. Around here, it has always been plant your corn, then plant your beans. Until the last 2 or 3 years, where some of us have started pushing the bill, see what we can get yield-wise, both corn and beans. You know, we've seen some pretty phenomenal yields come out of the county, corn and beans. But, you know, I budget for a 175 corn yield and a 55 to 60 bushel bean yield. That's what I budget for. Now, I budget a little bit probably safer than a lot of people, and Tanner would probably like me as a customer in the banking industry. But, I figure if I can make money budgeting on 175, then anything over that, we'll spend more money to get there. But, you know, we can make a little extra money, and we, you know, pay landlord bonuses, and that's really what it's all about. We rent a lot of ground, you know, we try to keep our landlords happy and, you know, share in the good years and hope they return the favor in the down years. And that's kind of what we do. But the high yield bug is kind of hit us on the yield contests. And once you get that bug, it's hard to get rid of. And it bit us a couple years ago, so we're doing what we can now to try to get 600 bushel, I guess, because that's the new national.
It is.
So what would be a rent that you say, yeah, I'm going to turn that one down, or a rent and say, yeah, I could make money at that?
Must be that blueberry, whatever the thing, getting the core here.
Yeah.
Blueberry, Project Blueberry book.
My wife just texted me and said, I wanted that blueberry beer, and I said, I took one drink.
You can have it.
You know, depending on the farm, I mean, there are farms here that are worth 200 or more, and there's farms that aren't worth 85. Mm-hmm. So the one thing that I'm really proud of that we try to do, we either try to 50-50 cash rent or share crop with our landlords, or do what we call a quarter, where they would insure their quarter of the crop, and they get, you know, if just use 200 as a number, if we make 200 bushel corn, they get 50 bushel to share it, to sell as they will, as they want. And that kind of goes back to sharing in the good years and yep, helping out in the bad years. So that's kind of how I like to turn my landlords towards, you know, if we got ones that want to do a cash rent, you know, I'm very conservative when I bid that, because I would rather bid it a little low and then pay a bonus if the yield is good or the prices are good.
I agree. It's like flex lease. So, it's crazy because the numbers that he was saying for like county averages and stuff and what he figures, it's not that far.
Right, not that far
from
off.
Flat and black and square.
That's what I was saying. I can't believe it in Kentucky. Yeah.
Yep. That's a good point. But you talked about the quartering, Mark. We've got some in here that are just going pure bushels, but it's almost up to a third. So yeah, say you're looking at 210, they want 70 bushel the acre. But I agree, it's still one of those methods that allows you to share good years and bad years.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. And we've got to truck our grain quite a long way. Our soybeans all go 90 miles to a crusher. Fortunately, a market we've kind of picked up here recently is we've gotten into the bourbon industry, and the way the bourbon industry is, they only want to deal with certain people. So they have a grain buyer that buys our grain and trucks it to them. They don't want to deal with, if they need, the particular place we go to takes four loads a day. They don't want to deal with four different farmers mm-hmm. to get those four loads. Actually, four loads a day from the guy that we sell to, they take probably 10 or 15 loads a day through other buyers. But they don't want to deal with 10 or 15 different people on that. They want to deal with three or four and say, hey, bring me these bushels. So then they're out buying it. So we'll either take it to their facility and offload it, or they'll come to the farm and pick it up. So that has saved us a whole lot of money in trucking. But it's also allowed us to do a better job managing our crop, because we're not worried about trucking all summer, getting grain gone to get grain bins empty. Whereas we can just, you know, I can go out, I can make an extra pass with the sprayer, I can scout a little better, or whatever I need to do to try to push yield to the next level.
See, that's what the farmers do if they don't have a sprayer that don't have the bourbon industry. They truck their grain all summer.
You know, that video kind of... milking cows, trucking grain, drinking beer, and going to the lake kind of took over the comment section of that video.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Cool.
Well, should we try this last one?
We've got one last beer that we've got lined up for today. So grab the Franklin Street India Pale Ale, one of Dave's going to be favorites, Orange Side Down. It's got grapefruits on the front. Isn't that a grapefruit?
Looks like a grapefruit.
Looks like grapefruit.
But it says orange.
Oh, it does. It's a blood orange. There you go. The little life box says blood orange, beaches, live music, and relaxation. Franklin Street out of Manchester, Iowa, an IPA.
Dave's face.
Don't spit it out, Dave.
So bad. Give that one to your wife, too.
I've tasted something similar to that before, and it was just as bad.
It was just as bad.
This is definitely
this
one
is
that
an IPA.
Tony Reed would say this one tastes like wood.
Pine trees. I don't mind it.
You know, obviously somebody drinks it or they wouldn't make it, and everybody's palate's different, but I can't even put my thumb on what kind of taste that is. I mean, that orange just hangs with you.
Yeah, when you mention that, it kind of does. That's what the aftertaste is.
So what bourbon do we buy to support your market, or is it going to multiple distilleries?
So we sell to Heaven Hill Distillery, and they have, I'd have to look it up, what exactly they are, and you put me on the spot. I can't even.
Must not be that good.
What their good ones are, to be honest with you. But they're more of a lower shelf. They do have some more premium products, but they're mainly in that 2 to 3 year, not aged as much bourbon is what ours goes to.
Tanner's pulling it up. Fact check. No, you got to
type
in
my birth date.
When you say Heaven Hill, it makes me think of like Angel's Envy or
Heaven Hill, or you know, we have a bunch of distillers around here. We have Jim Beam, we have Woodford Reserve, we have Knob Creek, we have Maker's Mark, and they all have different standards for grain that goes in them. Maker's Mark is all non-GMO, 100% non-GMO. And actually Bushels and Barrels was making a comment about when he was running his wheat crop this summer, he said, you know, that they use soft red winter wheat in Maker's Mark bourbon. And I said, you know what? Actually I do, because most of that is sourced from our area. Within, you know, an hour of my house, that's where 90% of Maker's Mark grain comes from.
So he's got it up. Elijah Craig is in there.
Elijah Craig is a good one.
Evan Williams.
That's one of their lower kind of, that'll be a lot of people.
That's a well.
There.
That's their well.
That's their well. That's right.
I don't recognize any of the others.
Yeah,
Pikesville.
The other one they had was Larceny.
I think they've got one that's just like a corn something. It literally just says like corn mash or
mellow corn. Straight corn whiskey.
We need to get a bottle of that. That looks interesting.
I'll see if I can find a bottle.
Even the logo on it is just, it looks like it's out of Mexico.
Actually, it does. That's a good point. It does look like it's Mexico.
I'm looking at it from like 6 foot away.
So, Mark, we always like to pepper our guests with that question about successful farmers. We'll be thinking about that, but while you're thinking on that, plug your social media channels so that way if someone wants to follow you up or if they want to interact with you and ask some questions about farming in your area, how they can find you.
So I'm on TikTok as at Thomas Farms. That's kind of our main one. That's really where we, you know, put out a lot of our content and our push for. We'll share some of that over to Twitter. I think I just actually changed my name on there to Thomas Farms. It's actually at Mark J. Thomas 87, I think is what it is. I have an Instagram, Thomas Farms KY. And then we have a YouTube page we've played with a little bit, some older videos on. It is also Thomas Farms KY. And you know, we're going to play with that a little bit more later and try to move some stuff over there, some longer videos, because you can only do so much in 60 seconds.
Yeah. And that YouTube is just it's a whole other ball game.
It is. And I've wanted to jump into the social media, you know, thing for a little while, watching other farmers do it and do it successfully. I thought, you know, I don't know if I can do that or not. And then last fall, it just kind of just took off one day and realized, I guess I have a little bit of niche that people think some things I think of are funny. So we kind of took that and run with it. I never dreamed I'd have 40,000 followers, and that's been a blessing to me. And I'm going to use 4880 Dusty's words, you know, I used followers, but you know, they're really friends, because mm-hmm. you know, people shouldn't follow me anywhere.
That's good. Kind of
that's good. That. But, you know, that's kind of, that's the truth. I mean, and the friends thing on TikTok has blown my mind, and I don't think it could have come at a better time. Farm talk, in my opinion, because we were in a time of down farm prices. And, you know, as I said before we got started talking, Western Kentucky University is actually putting together a video to share with people in the medical field to look for farmer mental health, because there has been some, you know, farmer mental health issues all across the country. And, you know, nobody wants to talk about it, but farmer suicides. And, you know, I think Farm Talk really gave people, you opened it up to a whole book of people who were doing the same things you were doing. If you were struggling, somebody else was probably struggling with the same thing. And at low grain prices, everybody's was just down and out, ready to, didn't want to farm anymore. You know, just burn out. And you got to see other people having fun and making jokes. And it just really kind of gave people a reason to laugh and enjoy what they do again. And now that we've rolled into higher prices, I think everybody is in a better mood, you know, especially on TikTok. I think people are in a better mood, and I don't know if it's because, you know, like I said, the friendships they've made over the last year and a half, or if grain prices are that much better, making everybody happy. But
markets are an attitude. Said it earlier to you, Corey.
You did say that.
Yep. Right.
Attitudes.
You know, I've talked to people, you know, either Snapchat or Facebook or TikTok or on the phone, whatever, on a regular basis that I've never met in person, may never meet in person, but, you know, we act like we've been friends for 20 years.
What do you think the people in China think of Farm Talk? Like, they invented TikTok, and then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, we invented this for, like, I don't know what their original TikTok was for, but.
Do they even know it, though? Because, like, if you ever get it out of Farm Talk on TikTok, like. Yeah. It's huge. Like, it's like the galaxy. Like, when you look out there and you find this, like, little realm of people, like, it's like, what is this?
Yeah.
And then there's just this huge following behind that subject. And so, like, and then you go back to Farm Talk, and it's like, it seems big to us, because we're finally connecting with everyone throughout the country and the world. But then you step out, and it's really still small.
Oh, yeah. Somebody's looking at the analytics.
Yeah. But they probably love it, because they see what we're doing now. We got all of our data.
Well, that's actually the only reason I got TikTok, is because Trump said he was going to delete it. No, if it's that big a deal that they're going to shut it down,
I better check this out.
I always want something you can't have. Well, and my argument to that, because we kind of didn't get on right away too. Oh yeah, China's going to get our data, but it's like, you know what? China's got our data if they want it. Like, they already have it.
So. Well, I know the way Gmail connects. When you log in on one computer versus the other from your phone, just Google itself is tracking enough of that information.
So I love it, though, because I went to do my flights the other day, and it already had my hotel saved because it knew that it was in my email. It added it to my calendar, and then when I went to Google Maps to go there, it said, hey, it looks like you're in St. Louis. Do you want to navigate to your hotel where the reservations are? Well, hell yes, I do. Mm-hmm. This is awesome.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
Have you figured out your answer to what do the most successful people, farmers, have in common?
I have. Resilience and adaptability. Because the best farmers are resilient against any, you know, all day, every day, we face something negative in agriculture. And most people would just step down, you know, when the tractor breaks down, you know what, I'm done. I'm going to quit farming. But they're resilient. They keep going back to it. And then adaptability, you know, in low grain prices, you know, if you're just a grain farmer, you're struggling. But if you can adapt that to find a new market or find a little niche or add a little something here on the side to make money, you're going to survive and you're going to be okay. And the most successful and well, the biggest land buyers and the biggest landowners are that way. They've been able to adapt over time to new technology, new ways of doing it. Whether that be the curse word of TikTok, you know, no-till versus conventional till. we were some of the first, you know, adapters of no-till in this area, you know, or this area was some of the first adapters in the country of it. And that kind of pushed our soil health. And it just it made farmers better overall because it reduced our inputs and, you know, just better as a whole.
Yeah, and I think your answer there to the previous question was great too. You know, resilience and adaptability. You're a great example of that. Your family is from dairy to farrow to finish to tobacco to the tobacco buyout and now row crops. So that's pretty cool. So what do you think, Tanner?
No, I think we had a great time. Mark, really appreciate you joining us. You've been on the list for a while. I'm glad that we finally got to meet up, even though we took some time out of your Father's Day weekend and got to celebrate the 4th of July all at the same time.
Yeah.
Not very many people get to do that.
Yep.
But truly, thank you for hanging out and having a good time.
I think we'll come to Louisville, and see you at the farm show. I've never been. I want to come down, so it'll be pretty cool.
That'll be great, and here's as good of a time to do it as any. I've been talking to some other guys about maybe one night during the farm show, there's a hotel out front, maybe getting with them and like renting a hotel room or a meeting room and just doing like farm talk meet and greet.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
I don't think it costs
you heard it here first.
They can set a open bar, not an open bar in there because I would never have an open bar and be the one to have to pay for it around farm talk bunch. But have a cash bar in there where people can kind of come and go and really get to meet a whole lot of people. So.
Yeah. Yep.
But no, thanks again, Mark. Corey, why don't you send us out?
Yep. Happy 4th of July. Crack it old distributing beer. Next drink, you deserve it.
Intro music recorded by Tyler Richton and the High Bank Boys. Commentary added by Elena Montemagni. And credit to bensound.com for music.